This episode of The Ready Room is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
I'm Jeff Combs. I'm everywhere on Star Trek, and you keep tuning in to Trek FM.
Welcome to The Ready Room, show number 175, Don't Knock the Cucumber Sandwiches. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me this week is Charlene Schmidt. We'll be talking about some Star Trek news, including rumors that CBS is preparing to bring Star Trek back to television, and Simon Pegg's comments about the next film, as well as a possible villain. Then in the feature, we're joined by Suzanne Abbott and Philip Gilfus to discuss the Voyager episode, Persistence of Vision. So let's step into the Ready Room. Hello, Char. It's great to have you back here with me on the Ready Room. And of course, that must mean that it's Voyager Week.
Surprise!
But you're here for non-Voyager shows quite often as well.
It's true, yeah, but I'm always here for the Voyager ones.
It would have to take here for Voyager.
Something like near-fatal illness or something downright disastrous to keep me away from the Ready Room on a Voyager week.
Well, you're kind of like my Neelix. I can't make my way through the Delta Quadrant without your guidance and wisdom.
Well, Neelix was kind of a crappy guide, so what are you saying, Chris? I'm not sure how to take that. But well, it's good to be here nevertheless.
But you make all those great dishes for us to eat, you know, before and after the show as well.
And drinks.
You are the master of the drink. But interestingly, your recipes always seem to involve vodka.
It's my Leola root.
So what do we have to talk about, Char? How's everything been going since last time you were on?
Boy, where do I even start? A lot of things are happening in my life right now. And I'm kind of in the prelude to a huge transition where we are going to leave Fargo, North Dakota, my husband and my cat and I, and off to either Salt Lake City or Phoenix. And no, we're not sure yet. We're still in that process of figuring it out. My husband's interviewing for a job in Salt Lake. And so hopefully that does work out. And if all else fails, we'll go from the extreme of the tundra to the extreme of the desert.
Well, I'm excited that you may be in mountain or Pacific time zone because it will make it a little bit easier for us to record shows together.
Yeah, indeed. This really is a global community, and time zones are our greatest enemy just because there's so much time distance between certain parts of the world. And for you, the further back with American time zones, the better.
That's right. Going west is great. You start going east, like tonight, we have you in central. We have Philip and Suzanne in eastern.
Mm-hmm.
A little bit of a balancing act.
Yes. Thankfully, they are night owls and we're willing to put up with a later start time.
Well, let's jump into the news here. We have two things to talk about today. And Char, we have to talk about this because I've been getting messages from people and it's been spreading everywhere. I kind of have a feeling that although you and I both desperately want new Star Trek on TV, we are reluctantly discussing this news story on LatinoReview.com, which was then picked up by The Nerdist and others. Headline, CBS is looking to bring Star Trek back to TV. Get in the article, scroll down about 10 or 12 paragraphs, and then the author finally decides to actually talk about what he mentioned in the headline.
Yeah, and this is the best non-news story out there, because if you clicked on it, and chances are by the time this episode drops, just about every Star Trek fan will have heard and read about it and blah, 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 blah. And if you haven't, if you have not clicked on the link, don't. Because it's crap. There's no real news in this story. It's all speculative. Yeah. The speculation focuses on who might run the next Trek series, and there's really no real credible information in here. There's no quotes from anybody at CBS. There's nothing.
There's nothing. And the thing is, all the speculation for most of the article is stuff that we've been talking about here on the Ready Room for the last 4 years since this show started.
Yeah.
It centers around Brian Singer. I'm sure if you go back to like the Ready Room 2 or something like that, we're talking about the speculation about Brian Singer and Star Trek. The only new thing that was in here for me was the author suggesting that Robert Meyer Burnett would be involved somehow. And Rob has said, no, I'm not doing that. And he brings it up as well, I think, about Rob and the next film. And so it's just like a lot of speculation from different sources. And the author put this article together. The article talks extensively about ideas such as Federation, which have been around forever. And we've talked about on here extensively. And I tried to read this article the first time, actually, and I had to drop out because I got tired of rereading old news. And then I went back to it again, and I got to the part. And here, Shar, is what it says when we get way down the article. We don't have too many details about the new Star Trek series CBS is going to get working on, but I spent some time filling you in on Federation because it seems like the same people who made that pitch could be involved. Could be involved, Shar. Could be
right.
Involved.
That says absolutely nothing.
Brian Singer's name has been mentioned for the new CBS Trek as a possible executive producer through his Bad Hat Harry Productions. While Star Trek Reboot the Universe was invalidated by 2008's movie Trek, Star Trek Federation still has a trio of enthusiastic producers, a script, and a writer ready to go, should CBS decide to give Singer the ahead to develop this new series. I think he means the go-ahead.
Yeah, and I think we can squash that already because, and I'm not sure where I read this, but he recently went out somewhere, whether it was on social media or in another article, he said, it's not me, and I'm not working on this. Federation was years ago, and it was squashed dead when the whole JJ thing came about, and that is that. Done.
Right.
Let it go. Yeah, this is nothing new, and yeah, like you said at the top here, I would love to see Star Trek back on TV. I think we all do. But we know nothing at this point, people. Nothing.
Right. So I would love to get on here. I mean, people may be listening right now and thinking, guys, why are you so negative about a story? And it's not that we're negative about that. I want Star Trek back on television. And I think that if CBS fails to launch a new Star Trek television series in the autumn of 2016, the anniversary year, 50th anniversary year of Star Trek, they will have really, really missed an opportunity.
Agreed.
And I think they know that. And I do think that they are, I don't know to what stage they're working on something, but these are business people. And they know that fans want a new show. They can see that they can make money with it. The whole distribution model for television has changed drastically since Enterprise went off the air. Mm-hmm. So they have a lot of different options that they can take advantage of for producing a show and getting it out there to us. And so I definitely think that they're working on something, but it's not what this article is talking about. And I've seen so many people spreading this article around the past couple of days and getting very excited. And I just wonder if they're actually reading it, because the content of the article has been around and we've all been discussing it in fandom for years now, and there are no quotes from anyone.
Nobody.
Just really don't think that the author actually uncovered anything new here. I think they just wrote a piece based on old information.
No.
And then they threw in the bit about Axanar, which is the only new thing in here. And
yeah.
The bit about Rob.
Well, and as good as Axanar is, it's not going to be the next TV series either. So again, this is all speculative and it's just letting somebody's imagination kind of run a little rampant. Well, we all do that. So
right.
I think what really, I think people are just reading the sensationalistic headline and going, oh my God, I got to retweet that, and not actually reading the meat of the article. And so I'm very cautiously optimistic about really everything, but especially when it comes to things like the media, unless I've got something from somebody at CBS or a quote or an official press release, something really credible, I'm not buying anything at this point, because then it's not official until it's coming from them.
Yeah, exactly. And of course, the reason everyone is retweeting this and sharing it on Facebook and it's getting all this excitement is because everyone in fandom is so hungry for new Star Trek. And that's wonderful. And it's important.
Yeah.
And
that's
another reason why Axanar is so important. You know, Axanar is produced so beautifully. But like you said, no matter how good Axanar is, the next TV series is not going to be Axanar, because the studio is going to do their own thing. That's just how it is. They're not going to pick up this independent production. Now, they may pick up some of the people who are working on Axanar and bring them over and have them work on a new series, and I hope they do. That's a real possibility, because the people working on Axanar are so skilled and so talented, and there are so many professionals involved in that project. But Axanar is, it's really creating a groundswell of support and fandom that's noticeable to CBS. And therefore, I do think Axanar is pushing the studio toward making a new series for everyone.
That's true. That's a really good way of putting that. Axanar is serving not only a great purpose by giving us great, fantastic, high-quality material, but also, yeah, of course the CBS producers know that there is a market out there for a new Star Trek series. We want it. There is a demand for it. I mean, can you imagine a couple of years from now, Chris, binge-watching on Star Trek? This is going to be a crazy, awesome experience when it does happen, because I do believe it will, too. They see an opportunity. They're going to capitalize on it. If there's money to be made, they're going to do it. And you know that there is, so they will. But we don't have anything yet.
Yeah, and you mentioned binge-watching, and I do think that there's a very real possibility that the next Star Trek series will be released on Hulu or Netflix, a system like that where they actually give us the season.
Yeah.
Not
one
at a time, week after week.
Yes. Yes. I definitely agree. That kind of a platform is ideal for a sci-fi serialized show. And so I definitely see it going in that direction for sure.
And I'm really excited on the network that we are going to get to do a show where we're talking about Star Trek that's new episodes coming out that none of us have ever seen before. And we can watch them, and then we can get together and we can talk about this material that we've seen for the very, very first time.
It's true. It's true. Because we were not back in the Enterprise days podcasting in 2004 about that show. It'll be the first time. That'll be very exciting.
Yeah, it's very, very exciting. So everyone, keep your excitement going. Take this article with a grain of salt, because there is nothing in this article that's new.
Yeah, I mean, it's really a disservice.
It doesn't give me any hope that anything has changed, not based on what's written in here. I mean, he even closes out the article saying that CBS is convinced it's a good idea to probe the idea of a Star Trek TV show. So TV Trek's likely on the way. Well, yes. I mean, I don't think that there's anyone who can't see that. That's just basic economics. You have one of the longest running, most valuable franchises in television and film history. Of course you're going to do something with it eventually.
Right.
All right. Well, Char, let's go on to the next piece here. This is about the movie. And this is one where I really would like to have more information before talking too much about this also, but we know that after Roberto Orci was ousted as the writer of Star Trek III, as everyone is calling it, the next Star Trek film in the Abramsverse, Simon Pegg got the gig to write the movie. And we don't really quite know what that means, but he says that he's going to take it forward with the spirit of the TV show. He also says that the story is about frontierism and adventure and optimism and fun, and that's where we want to take it. Where no man has gone before, where no one has gone before, sensibly corrected for a more enlightened generation. But yeah, that's the mood at the moment. What does that mean to you, Shar?
You know, it's very kind of glib in a way where the description doesn't say a whole lot at all. And yet it does give me this vision of the very best of the TV series, which was bold and adventurous and had a little bit of a lighthearted tone. Now, I think one thing that the new movies have done very well is they do inject a little bit of comedy, and they do it fairly decently. And so I think that's definitely going to stay in with, especially with Simon Pegg as a writer. And so I think we're going to see something with the 5-year mission. And this is all speculative, too. I mean, this is something that we've been talking about since Into Darkness kind of had its run and when they started getting ready for this third movie. And so what they're actually doing with the story, he can't give anything away at this point, of course. Sure. He's not even done writing it at this point, actually. He has a self-imposed deadline of June.
Yeah, and he said something like he's going to have a script in June, come hell or high water.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know how they're going to get this movie out.
They're going to have to Nick Meyer it. You know, I mean, it's going to be white hot on the seat of their pants, I think.
Well, you know, would that not make a better movie if they took that approach where it's a lower budget and we're going to tell a really great story and we're not going to try to make it the over-the-top spectacle? Now, I don't know if it would do better at the box office that way. It probably wouldn't. But I think for fans like us, we probably would get a story that we enjoyed more.
Right. And this being the third installment of this part of the franchise, I think you've got a fan base that's following along. You can get a little more in depth and not have to maybe necessarily appeal to the general audience in terms of making an action flick. Of course, there's going to be action in it, but I just really want a good story. I hope that's what's happening. And with all the mix-up and whatnot, causing anxiety about whether they're even going to get this out on time, I have faith, though, that he's going to do it. I think he's going to give us the very best story that he can.
Well, yeah. I mean, I'm not worried so much about what Simon Pegg is going to write, and I think he can have a script done by June. I don't know how they're going to actually produce the movie. I don't know how they're going to cast, film, and do post and get this film out in time for the anniversary.
They're pushing it, that's for sure.
Because
it's a July 2016 release.
I mean, I hope Kienzer has got those engines running well. You know, since Scotty's going to be riding, it's going to be up to Kienzer because they're going to need to go at maximum warp.
Do you suppose Chekhov is assisting him at this point?
God, I hope not. If he is, then the film's certainly not going to come out on time.
Scotty's going to walk in there. What did you do to my engines?
So we're going to see. I mean, I've said this before on this show and on Literary Treks, of course. The Abramsverse comics that IDW does are so much better than the movies that have been produced. And I really thought that Roberto Orsi, because he oversees those comics, I thought that he was going to follow that route and give us these stories that are better connected to the spirit of the original series instead of what we've gotten in 2009 and Into Darkness. But then the script that I heard about that they had put together was, I wasn't interested at all in this script, and I felt like they, you know, were once again missing an opportunity to really take us out on a 5-year mission. It was still more like course correction for the changes that they had made to the timeline, and also the gimmick of trying to have Shatner and Nimoy, which of course now wouldn't be possible anyway, unfortunately, in the film. So I'm hoping that Simon Pegg is going to go more of the route that the comics have gone, in that you're going to draw upon the original series and create a story that Star Trek fans can really enjoy that is true to TOS and is less big box office action flick.
Right. And maybe that's what Simon Pegg means when he's talking about the frontierism and adventure and optimism of the show.
Yeah.
Maybe that's what he's going to capture. And if that's the case, I think we're in for a really good movie. So here's hoping.
So quick side note here, not really a separate story, but related to this film, rumor is that the actor Idris Elba may be the villain in this next movie. And then I've also seen a little bit of speculation. Well, first of all, they said rumor is he would be playing a Klingon. Now, I would like to see them go back to the Klingons here. I'm not a huge Klingon fan, actually, but the way that they have used the Klingons so far in the Abramsverse, it's just so much of a tease that we really need a story really involving them. I know they went to Kronos and Into Darkness, but that story wasn't really about Klingons.
Right. No, they were just there.
They were just there, and we got to see a bit of the reimagined aesthetic, which was kind of cool. But I'm just kind of wondering if Simon Pegg is going to draw upon the original series here. Could this be Kor or Kang or Koloth who Elba would be playing?
Entirely possible, right?
Could be.
Yeah. I'd be game.
Because, you know, that would have been the possibility of a recurring villain in TOS if the show had been written and produced more in the way that later television was, and we didn't get that in TOS. But it would make sense to have Kirk face off against one of them again.
Yes, you're absolutely right. That's a familiar name to us. It makes sense to do kind of a reinterpretation of a character that we already know and love, and I'd be okay with this, for sure. And like you, I'm not a huge Klingon fan, but I do feel like if they do anything at all with Klingons in this one, they got to go into some depth, and so why not do it with a really good character?
Maybe it'll be a follow-up or a remake of Errand of Mercy, and it'll be titled Star Trek Into the Mind Sifter. Sub-subtitle. Did I mention our Mind Sifter?
Yeah. Oh, I kind of want to see the movie poster for that.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
All right. I'm sure it would have some green goats on it down at the bottom.
So. That'd be great.
All right. Well, we will see where this all goes. I'm sure there will be some more news about the film coming up in the next few months that will be real news, because that's actually underway. And as far as what we discussed regarding a future Star Trek television series, I'm sure it's going to happen sometime within the next few years. I would be really surprised if CBS doesn't, you know, revitalize Star Trek on television. But as to when it's going to happen and what form it's going to take, we don't know. And I don't expect we're going to have any real details anytime soon on that either.
All right.
Char. Well, let's bring in Philip and Suzanne and talk some Voyager.
Yay, Voyager.
Captain Janeway is in a bad mood. Everyone knows that the best cure is lunch with Neelix. That's how we kick off persistence of vision, but things go downhill from there, thanks in part to Janeway's gothic novel and a kind of creepy alien guy who I call both a dude. Today we're going to talk about persistence of vision, and to help us do that, we're joined once again by the best fanfic writer on Trek FM or the internet, Suzanne Abbott. Suzanne, welcome.
Hey, it's good to be back.
Good to have you back. And the other person who I promised everyone I would never combine on a panel with Char and Suzanne, from Earl Grey, Philip Gilfus. Hey, Philip.
Hi, Chris. I like how I made the bad guy out of the gate. It's like, Suzanne's fine. Philip's the troublemaker. So, fine. I'm
yeah,
here to be
it's
the
all your fault, buddy.
If the shoe fits.
Well, so in our discussion group, the Babel Conference, yesterday, I think it was, The whole thing came up of the last time we were all on the show together talking about Voyager, an episode called Strip Down and Get Physical, where we talked about macrocosm. And I said, I'm never going to have the three of you together on a panel again. Of course,
liar.
We've already been planning all week to join each other to talk about this episode today. I just have a feeling. No, let me just correct myself right here. I was going to say, I have a feeling this show is going to go off the rails. If you listen to the end of the show after the music ends, I'm probably going to put the last 10 minutes of our recording that we just did. We went off the rails before we even started the show today.
So, well, let's be really honest here. It was off the rails before we hit record.
This is just
the footage that you got.
This is true.
Yeah, we know how to have a good time.
All right. So we always kick these things off with a synopsis of the episode. I'm not going to do the synopsis today. I'm going to hand that over to Philip because the synopsis he gave us off air was just so good that I think that he needs to share one with you guys.
Sure. So the Enterprise D is ferrying diplomats. Oh, wait, I'm reading my wrong synopsis here. Okay, hold on. All right, here it is. For this one. Okay. Yes. So basically what happens is, you know, Captain Janeway's having a bad day. The doctor gives her a prescription to go have fun. And instead, she goes and starts her holodeck program. From there, she starts seeing bizarre visions of the holodeck. She starts missing her man and starts feeling like she's just going crazy, even though she's due to meet this new alien. They finally meet the new alien. He turns out to be like this LSD drug dealer and starts giving them all a bunch of hallucinations. All the crew has these different hallucinations. The alien tries to take over the ship, and the most wonderful member of the crew, Kes, ends up saving the day. The end.
Would this episode have been better if during all of this other stuff that was happening, in preparation to meet this alien, if Janeway had to learn how to speak in some sort of clicking language?
Yeah, or maybe, I think Neelix was actually about to tell her how to pronounce, you know, how do you do, but instead she spent all this time in the holodeck. Wait a minute, I've seen this episode. Never mind.
So, that was a pretty good episode. I'm disappointed, Philip, that there was no flute music.
Well, there is flute music later in those kind of episodes, especially in the Jeffries tube, because in the TNG, we use flute music to indicate... Well, never mind. We're talking about Voyager.
Yeah, flute music is used entirely differently on Voyager.
Yes.
That's right. Well, let's go ahead and jump into the topics we want to talk about here, because we have a lot of them. Now... those who read Memory Alpha will know that the people that run that site, they like to take obscure story elements from time to time and say, these three or four episodes are part of the so-and-so arc. Well, I think this one is part three of the Janeway Goes Goth arc, and not in the way you think. This is not going goth, as she did in Bride of Chaotica, one of Suzanne's favorite episodes I know.
Love
yes, that was awesome.
But this is going gothic, which always felt to me like maybe Jerry Taylor, who was a fan of gothic novels, was running some sort of experiment to see if she could actually put Star Trek fans to sleep while they're watching their favorite show. Did you guys ever enjoy the gothic novel holodeck program that Janeway would disappear into?
No. Okay. It was Jane Eyre.
In short,
that's
absolutely
all it was.
Not. The only reason why I think Janeway might have enjoyed this Victorian holonovel program was because really the core of it, I think, had we actually progressed and seen the heart of the matter, it was probably a romance novel. And as we're going to get into later in this episode, this persistence of vision deals a lot with loneliness. And so I'm thinking maybe she could make out with Lord Burleigh and not feel guilty about it because he was a hologram. And this was way before the whole holographic sentience thing that happens later in the series. And so I'm thinking that way before Michael Sullivan even comes along, Janeway still had horrible taste in holographic boyfriends.
Are you sure Janeway wasn't just going in there to get down with Mrs. Templeton?
You never know. Maybe she was.
Which, by the way, I just want to say Carolyn Seymour. I think she's a little competition with Jeffrey Combs here in Star Trek. I'm just going to throw that out there.
He is everywhere.
She is everywhere.
She's in a lot of places, including Janeway's quarters.
She's next to everywhere.
Maybe she, with that knife that she attacks Janeway with, could fight Shreon with his ice cleaver.
I'll take your blood to Andorra.
See that.
I would want to see
now. Now I want a gothic Andorian holodeck program.
I want Star Trek. What is that show that they did on MTV for a while with the claymation celebrity showdown
celebrity
or something?
Deathmatch.
Yeah, celebrity I want to see match. That Star Trek version.
See, I always use, I'll allow that in my daily life. I always, that's mine.
That's
I,
great.
That is from
that's
Deathmatch.
Great.
Nobody ever gets the reference.
But. Yeah. I want a good, clean fight. Now let's get it on.
Well, like, you know, and you know, they do it in every Star Trek incarnation, or at least the 24th century ones, about, you know, the characters getting ready to go in a holodeck. And there's always a discussion about, like, is it holographic clothes? Is it real clothes? But we see Janeway, like, putting on the whole, which I assume is not easy to put on alone, petticoats and everything. You know,
No, because there's a corset involved. That
is
difficult.
She's dedicated to this story, I would
say. It's elaborate, man. Yeah, that's the one thing that I do appreciate about the whole Victorian Holo novel thing is all the costumes. They're extremely intricate and elaborate, and they're just downright gorgeous. But
how many replicator rations did that cost her?
No kidding, right?
Is that why exactly.
She could not have afforded that.
Why do you think she forced
herself?
She
couldn't have had coffee at all.
Maybe that's why she's so grumpy in this episode to start it off.
No, I know why she's grumpy, and this is why she gets into this outfit, even though it's so hard to put on. She's hoping that one day Chakotay's going to come and help her put it on. And he didn't do it this time either, and so she was just really grumpy about that.
He's supposed to help her take it off.
That's right.
That's right. Voyager, once the camera goes off.
Oh, you know what would have been awesome? If in this episode, okay, I know it probably doesn't work on the timeline, but when they look at the view screen and they're all seeing the different people, if Janeway and Chakotay are on the bridge together, they both look at the view screen and they see the monkey.
Mm-hmm.
I could see that.
Damn monkey.
It's really too bad that resolutions didn't happen before this episode so that we could have found this out.
Wait, I thought...
Because the monkey's not even in their consciousness at this point.
I thought the monkey was the little boy. That wasn't the monkey? I thought...
Don't be a goose.
So, I mean, like, Chris, you bring up this holo novel. Like, to me, I'm wondering, what's the actual story? Because it seems very familiar, whether it's Sound of Music, whether it's the Doctor Who Christmas special, which I can't remember the name of that, but this one where he's in the Victorian era, and he's friend, you know, the companion ends up being a governess with two kids and a dead mom and a husband who's fallen in love with her. I'm like, seems like a very, and then there's a ghost of the person who died, and I'm like, this is just, yeah. I didn't know this was such a cliche in America, you know, Anglo stories.
Apparently it was. Well,
everybody
Actually,
loves
I
Jane
think
Eyre.
That they were trying to
everybody
loosely base
Jane
it off
Eyre.
Of Wuthering Heights.
Yeah, that's what it felt like.
If I'm recalling
like.
Correctly.
Yeah, to me too. Yeah.
So is Chakotay Heathcliff?
Hmm. Never thought about that.
So I'm watching the episode, and as we keep going through the Holo novel, I literally am wondering if Jerry Taylor's trying to put the fans to sleep watching this episode. I'm glad this was the last time that we saw the Gothic Holo novel. Maybe, you know, three strikes and you're out. The fans don't like it. Stop putting it into the episodes.
Well,
and then we move on.
Well,
I think they should only let Tom Paris create the Holo novels.
Well, I was going to say, what's the next Holo program we start to see in Voyager? Baywatch in
that
space.
That wasn't already established?
Wasn't Baywatch?
Because Sandrine's was established.
Oh, yeah, Sandrine's.
Yeah.
Wasn't Baywatch
I think
after
it was
this?
Baywatch. Yeah.
So they went into a different direction.
A little bit.
Oh, Neelix's bare feet. Ew.
Well, just be glad that Phlox wasn't on Voyager, because you could see Phlox there in his bathing suit with his
unclipped
toenails.
Phlox would have been awesome.
Well,
oh, my.
You know, one thing about Holo novels and Holo stories, and it's really got me in persistence of vision, and maybe it's just a word choice, but they often use the word, or Janeway uses the word fantasy.
Yeah.
About, and like, I don't know, is this your fantasy? I mean, is that like, I can be like,
that's
a, like a book.
So strange about
I don't
it, right?
Read a book and be like, oh, yes, I'm reading this book on the Senate. It's my fantasy time. I'm like, no, I'm just reading a book I find interesting.
That's a good point. Like, this is really, like, deep down what she wants. Really? Taking care of two bratty kids and studying Latin with them and eating cucumber sandwiches? Wow.
Don't knock the cucumber sandwiches.
You know, to some haters.
I don't like the way the cook cuts them.
I don't say to some haters, Char, you just described the Voyager plot.
Yeah. Wow.
But that's the point, right? That later on, I mean, even the Irish program. Of course, that's actually Tom's program, right? The Fairhaven mm-hmm. program. Mm-hmm. But Janeway goes there and she gets her man. But when it's Janeway's program, it's this, or it's Leonardo da Vinci's workshop.
Oh, I thought she was just watching Sliders. Was that supposed to be authentically da Vinci?
Right. Oh. Yeah. All right. Well, there's the holodeck. And of course, I guess this all also has to take place on the holodeck. Well, not the holodeck part itself here, but the fact that they're also working on the emitters around the ship so they can move the doctor around is mm-hmm. sort of there to throw you off track, right? Oh, it's the classic holodeck mm-hmm. malfunction when it's actually this creepy alien stalker kind of guy instead.
Well, you know, when I was watching this, because this is what, remind me, where this is what, second season or first season?
Yeah,
second season. Yeah. So, which I know first season is cut in half. So, in some ways, you can't say. I mean, it's really still early in the series.
Well, actually, yeah, this is the 8th episode of season 2. So, it kind of maybe is a season 1 episode that didn't get made because they had more episodes, right? And then they cut it at.
Right. Like, this was not officially a holdover, though.
Oh, this was not.
Like, they didn't film it with season 1 and then hold it.
Yeah.
This was not one of those.
Because it's one of those, like, I'm glad they're working on the doctor. Like, you would think, like, third episode and they're like, we should really have the doctor appear throughout the ship. That would, I mean, at least right. not like really, but just like working on it. And so I'm glad they're finally getting to that.
Yeah, but then notice that they don't keep working on it.
Yeah, that's one of those ideas that sounded cool when they came up with it, but then it very quickly gets old. Again, it's like Travis being a boomer on Enterprise. Like, okay, now everyone's in space, so not so special to be a boomer anymore, is it?
Chris, did you know the doctor's a hologram?
Really?
Then she, there's actually a sweet spot in sick bay where he can I don't know.
Yeah, Philip calls it Kess.
Oh, ew.
There's nothing new about that. That's just 3.5 seasons of
Oh man.
No, I kind of hope he does. I want to see what happens.
She's just wearing the nurse.
Oh,
uniform.
He'll probably throw spaghetti at Philip, so.
Well, at least they didn't have to eat
it. Oh, man. I just don't want to see the Dr. Kess Philip threesome. No offense, Philip.
Wait, Suzanne, why are you starting to type?
I'll let you know in about a week or so.
Oh, man. All right. Well, let's go on to the next topic here, Grumpy Janeway. She's in such a bad mood from the very
beginning. Is that like Grumpy Cat?
Yeah, from the beginning of the episode.
I have to get back to the Alpha Quadrant.
Still stuck in the Delta Quadrant. Good.
The Maquis
so
can't
I was
along.
Thinking someone didn't have Good. Their coffee this morning. And now that I really think about it as we're discussing it, I think she didn't have her coffee because she spent all of her replicator rations on the dress for her visit
she
to
did,
the holodeck.
Those doilies don't make themselves.
She just couldn't bear the better than coffee substitute anymore.
Well, who
could handle it? Yeah, seriously.
They should put that on the menu at Starbucks for Star Trek fans.
And they just pour the Hershey syrup in there and plop, 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 plop. Well, it's got that thick consistency.
Well, the funny thing, this actually, I mean, it comes later, obviously, but it reminds me, and I'm blanking Char on the episode title, or Suzanne. The one where, okay. I know y'all did the Ready Room with my co-host Daniel on the everyone's experimenting on the Voyager crew.
Episode. Oh, well, that's the one I was just thinking about
scientific
right now
method,
as well.
Yeah.
Scientific method, yeah.
Yeah, because that's it reminded me of the same thing, like Grumpy Janeway is just like that one.
Except in Scientific Method, I mean, again, this is sort of like after you watch it and you go back and you think about the beginning, but at least that one feels like it makes a little bit more sense because you're clued in that something's weird going on because right at the beginning of that mm-hmm. episode, you see, you know, like inside Tom and B'Elanna, you know, the coffee going down.
You're like,
so,
for real.
Right. But you know, like there's something weird going on in this episode. And then later you see the people experimenting on everyone. But in this mm-hmm. episode, Persistence of Vision, she's just grumpy with no explanation from the beginning. I find it a little bit odd. I would think everyone on the ship is very uncomfortable. And also, it's this thing about portraying the captain. I mean, you don't see Kirk or Picard or Sisko just being walking around the ship being grumpy and short with everyone.
Picard
but they're writing Janeway that way.
Just do it.
Yeah, it is kind of weird. Like, I'm not entirely sure what they were trying to get at with this. Like, I think maybe they were trying to show just how much work goes into even the most routine orders of business aboard a starship and just how much responsibility
sure.
a starship captain has. But I dislike it because it's exaggerated so much. Like, Janeway's got this. She knows what it takes to be a Starfleet right, exactly. captain, and this is not a problem before or since. So if she's having a bad day, fine, but this is way over the top for that.
So here's sort of my issue with it. Jeri Taylor wanted to do the story. This is her story. She wanted to have a female captain. She's championing mm-hmm. Janeway, you know, and she, well, you know, we did Mosaic on Literary Trek, so we know how she wrote Janeway there. But if yeah. you're going to put a woman in the captain's chair and she's the first woman lead captain on Star Trek and it's all this big deal, and you've had your male captains, especially coming off of Picard, he doesn't freak out about things going on around the ship. Why is Jeri Taylor right. writing Janeway this way? Because the message that it is sending is like, okay, well, she's the woman captain and she can't handle all the stress and now she's getting all moody. That's not the message that you're trying to send, right?
Okay, I think I have an idea why. She just did it wrong. But I think what she was trying
is that
to
your
do...
idea? She did it
she
wrong.
She just did it wrong.
No, for real. Hear me out here. Hear me out. Don't get me wrong. I love Jeri Taylor, but she has a completely different view of women than I do. Generation gap, I think.
Yeah, I can see that. Yeah.
I think what she's trying to portray here and identify with, or to have the fans, you know, identify with, especially women, is the whole idea of the superwoman who, in the 80s and 90s, you know, the lady who had the career and the family and the hobbies, and she was doing it all.
Is this the 9-to-5
episode? You know,
episode?
I think she was trying to...
But Janeway didn't get to have it all. She didn't get to have the family.
It's true.
She didn't get to hook up with Chakotay.
Well, and that's just the thing is like at this point in the juncture, she doesn't have her family. She's detached from them. And so what replaces that is the burden of that loss. So she's bearing the weight of it in a different way entirely. But like I said, if this is what Jeri Taylor was trying to do, she's making Janeway look bad as a result.
Yes,
and it's
exactly.
not doing her any favors. And yeah. so, no, bad Jeri Taylor, bad.
It comes off as very sexist. It's like, okay, when a woman's in charge, she can't handle the stress, so she just gets bitchy
that,
with everybody.
That is the yeah. message that I get from the first part of this episode, which well, I know is not true, and that's why I just find it puzzling. Yeah.
Well, I actually have an explanation. It's sort of, you know, and I don't like to beat up on characters. I let the episode do it for me. You know, Janeway is getting this list of tasks she has to complete. You know, I have to go do this tactical review. I have to go do this. And it's like, man... If only there was someone else whose job on the ship was to right? be second in command right. to take care of this stuff.
Right?
That, like, you know, if only she didn't have to do it all. And, like, when she's stuck in sick bay, if only there was somebody she could trust. I don't know,
yeah,
she only
that's
has this
just
one,
it.
You know, but no. You know, like you know, when she's giving Chakotay, she's like, okay, remember that. Like, obviously you don't trust him, Kate. That is
yes.
what I'm getting from you 100%.
Right.
This is why
yes.
the poor woman's stressed. She has an unreliable first officer. There, I
yeah,
said.
Yeah, okay. Granted, this is a little more stressful of a first contact situation because the dude's so mysterious and rigid. But if Janeway can't trust Chakotay to handle a first contact situation, then why is he the first officer? Again, this is something that's not quite handled properly because... It makes Janeway look like a control freak, and it makes Chakotay look incompetent.
But then there's Tuvok for backup, and you know she can trust him. What's... Yeah.
Well, he wasn't doing shit.
He had a lot of stuff to do on
Sorry,
his control
Chris.
Panels, Char. He had a Sorry. Lot of tapping to do in this episode. He couldn't stop that, you know. It's...
A lot of responsibility, I'm sure. He just wasn't flustered by it like Janeway was. You know, I've got to tap this, and then I've got to tap that, and I've got to tap over here, and I've got to tap over there, and ugh.
Wait.
I have to raise my eyebrow.
Wait.
Yeah.
All this tapping, Char, was it 7 years already?
Yeah, it's true. We were not specifying what he was tapping.
I mean, his wife did show
that.
Up. Right, so...
Well done, Philip.
So later we get an explanation as to why she's grumpy, I suppose. People are being manipulated by both a dude, but yeah, I don't know. I don't like the grumpy Janeway part of the story.
Yeah, well, and I'm not buying that that's the explanation anyway.
Well, right, because it's not really firmly established that that's the cause. It's not like scientific method where you can understand at the end, this is why everyone was acting this way.
Yeah, I don't think he starts messing with people until after that initial meeting.
Yeah, I mean, and there's some stuff which I'll read into, which again, could just be me reading into it. It could just be me projecting. But, you know, it's sort of that, like, Janeway's never had her, dude, I'm stuck in the Delta Quadrant, everything sucks, I can't believe I'm doing this moment. Like, this could just be a delayed reaction. You know, the crew's had time to deal, and she's had to play captain. In this episode, we see her missing, you know, finally, you know, not finally, but really thinking about Mark, and then really feeling, you know, how everything's going on. And she's not eating, she's not sleeping, you know, usual captain stuff. And it almost reminds me of that sort of, I know I have to do it, I'm sorry. Reminds me of Captain's Holiday, you know, where you almost have to have that excuse of like, oh, the captain's being all blah, blah, let's go send him on a holiday. But like here you have that excuse of where the doctor's like, I'm ordering you to go forward on the holodeck.
Philip, do you remember in Captain's Holiday, do you remember when Riker suggested that Picard should go and take a break? And then they cut to every person on the bridge and every person gave a look of agreement with Riker. And it took like 5 minutes to cover everyone. And they cut down to engineering. And then Geordi, through his visor, gave a look as well.
One of those, should I trust Riker on this one? Everyone's like, and then Troy is just shaking her head. And anyway.
Oh, that's fantastic. Okay, that actually delves into the one thing that I think is really interesting about this episode. And that is Janeway's loneliness. Because we had at first the acute loneliness, like, okay, wow, the reality is hit that we are stuck out here in the very like early part of season one with like the cloud and Eye of the Needle and whatnot. And this, I feel, is like the long-term manifestation of the loneliness finally hitting in and how profoundly that's impacting her. And I think that is something that we should have seen a lot more. It's the timing, I think, is spot on. And I think, Chris, you mentioned earlier that the producers thought, oh, this isn't the right time for this. They're absolutely wrong. This was the right time. They're probably like, what, about a year out in the Delta Quadrant at this point? This is the perfect time. And well, so I don't know where they're coming from on that.
Yeah, so they said Jerry Taylor wanted to do this story for a long time and the studio didn't want to do it. The studio thought it was a lightweight story, which I kind of agree with them on that, at least the way it's presented to us. But they also didn't want it to occur so early in the series. But like you're saying right now, this is the right time for this story if you're going to do it. Because if it relies upon the crew remembering their loved ones back home and being affected by that, this is about the right time. Yeah, a year out, it's starting to set in. If you did this even a season later, and especially if you did it like two or three seasons later, it wouldn't work. Because by that time, they're used to everything and they've come to terms with their situation and they've settled in and they're now a family on the ship.
Exactly. If you did it in the following season, even, they've already started to embrace the family concept on Voyager, and then, sorry, it's too late.
Yeah, because what this episode reminds me of, and I don't know how, anyway, what it reminds me of is like, it reminds me of
which
both,
TNG episode does this remind you of, Philip?
It reminds me of every Star Trek episode. It reminds me of TOS, TNG, the naked shows, Naked Time and Naked Now. Oh, excuse me, Chris is here. The Naked Time and Naked Now.
Yeah, the naked ones.
Yeah. And I don't know what you would say Deep Space Nine is. Maybe Wishes, Horses, I don't know. But basically, it's that early episode that just like, okay, we're just going to show or attempt to show what make all these characters tick and just show it. And like, to me, this is what this episode is of Voyager. Like, we're just going to throw all these weird visions, like, just to show how these characters are. It's almost like a, I don't know if it's a repilot, but it's basically an excuse to show like, hey, here's more about these characters as we do the other stories.
You know, I think this is more of the, in terms of Naked Now, Naked Time kind of thing, it's more of the game of who would you make out with?
That's true.
Because the alien, that is pretty much how he seduces everybody.
Well, now, I have to say, I noticed a theme also as I was preparing for the show. The pattern that I noticed is that every time I have the three of you on the show together and I ask you guys for a suggestion on the episode you choose always has a makeout scene.
What are are you saying, Chris?
Voyager's a sexy show. It's what we're saying. Is. They like to have fun. They like to, you know, they like to hit the threshold.
Some naughty time.
Mm-hmm.
It's a swinging ship,
but it is true. That it would
swinging
be
swinging through the Delta Quadrant.
It would be like if Chakotay were captain and Tom were the first officer.
Takes all kinds, man.
Yeah, no, this is the ship of the Valkyries. Okay, look, this is how this thing's going. Look, we have the helmsman has fathered children with two different people on the ship. There's just lots of things going on.
The ops officer has space herpes.
That's true.
Right?
Yes.
Yeah.
I noticed.
Yeah, they really should have maybe done Melrose Space. Oh, like people thought it might have become. Yeah, didn't you guys ever hear that back in the 90s? How, like, they thought that a Janeway Chakotay romance would have possibly turned Voyager more into a soap opera type of show where it's all about them and their romance. And so people were calling it the concept of Melrose Space.
Okay.
Because Melrose Place, for those of you who don't remember the freaking 90s, was a big soap opera back in that day.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Well, a nighttime soap, right? Because I had classmates in university who would have to run home at a certain time on, I think it was Wednesday. I don't remember what day it was for sure. But they would run home because they had to watch Melrose Place.
Because you had to see what Billy and Heather Locklear were up to. I mean, I've never seen the show. I don't know what you're talking about.
So here's a question talking about Tom and everyone seeing their visions. So what's the deal? You know, does Tom have a dad we don't know about?
Apparently.
Because who was this guy that he was remembering as his dad?
Was that Nick Locarno's dad?
That was Nick Locarno's dad, yes.
We just got them mixed up throughout the series. That's what happened. And this guy was just as mean as his real dad.
Yeah.
I felt bad for Tom with his vision. I mean, he was the only one who didn't get to make out, for one.
Maybe there's
but then
some sort
he's
of
also
thing.
Just his self-esteem is just getting crushed, and it explains so much about why Tom is the way he is and what he's been through and how that's impacted him. You know, anytime somebody is told you can't do anything right, you'll fail, and you believe that, oof, yeah, it's a little heart-wrenching to watch that part of this show, actually.
Yeah, and I think this, and I don't know if we're jumping ahead, Chris, but I think the thing about these visions, which strikes me, and this is to me the existential question, which is what I always do when I'm talking Trek, is like these projections. Now, are they being forced onto the members, you know, crew members taking from their memory? Or is this sort of the crew members doing this to themselves? And Chris, as an example, like with Hoshi in Enterprise, remember how her dad's all weird? But I think when you were on Warp 5, you were talking about like, well, that's not probably really her dad. That's right. How Hoshi's projecting her dad. And so to me, it's like, is Admiral Parrish really like that? Or is this just Tom sort of like through his filter of what he thinks his dad would say, even though maybe his dad's just really
that's
big,
a really
teddy
good
bear.
Question.
With Hoshi, that was... It's so bad because it's easy to make fun, you know, like Hoshi's dad is kind of, I don't know.
What are you trying to say, Chris? He's
maybe
kind of
the lights aren't all on upstairs.
What,
but
our lights aren't on? Are we an electric power company? What are you trying to say, Chris?
but that's how Hoshi apparently thinks of her dad, which is sort of troubling. But I think in this case, that's what's going on here. This is what Char was saying about Tom's dad probably telling him all the time, you know, like you're a screw up and you can't do anything right. So that's what Tom is remembering of his dad. So when we see the situation here, that's Tom projecting his memories and feelings about his dad.
Yeah, agree.
Now, I think they did miss an opportunity for a big musical number here, though, because Tom's dad tells him when the going gets tough, and I thought he was going to quote Billy Ocean and say the tough get going, and then they were all going to break out into a whole musical number, be like Glee in space.
Oh,
so we watched that show.
That would be so awesome.
Then they could go to the sweet spot and they could do Walking on the Ceiling.
They could do I'm Walking on Sunshine, only I'm Walking on the Ceiling.
Whoa. Oh, God. I'm writing this entire series in my head right now.
Okay, I bet you are, Philip.
So, like, we could have, you know how they have theme shows in Glee? Well, it's over now, but it'd be like David Bowie theme because you'd have the Ziggy Stardust
going. It would be the Sue Sylvester.
I think, let's see.
The doctor would
be
good.
I think Seska.
Yeah. Oh, that's true. Yeah. I think Seska would be good. No, I don't know. Yeah. I can see that. And yeah, I'm writing it all in my head right now. Yeah.
Philip's mind is just running a mile a minute
it
right now.
It always is, yeah.
And this is what you missed on Voyager. Ba-ba-da-ba-da-ba-ba.
Yeah.
And Philip will say, writing musical episodes isn't the only thing we've been doing on the network this week.
Yeah.
Gosh, I wish Voyager would sing its own songs. Why do they keep stealing other people's?
So, Philip, what you mentioned here is a good tie-in to another thing that I noticed that I feel about this episode is that Botha Dude is a lot like Cybok in Star Trek V. It's like he's trying to take over the ship by making everyone feel their pain. And they're having these memories of their loved ones, and everyone's just sort of in this comatose state. So you wonder, if he succeeds, will they eventually come out of it, and then they'll just do whatever he wants, and he'll have control of the ship? Will they go to Shakari? Is Shakari really in the Delta Quadrant?
Oh, Chris, I have never thought of this guy, the Botha Dude, in this way. He was never a Delta Quadrant version of Cybok. And now that you've brought it up, it's going to be forever ingrained in my brain. And now I really want that scene where Janeway confronts him at the end and she says, "No, I need my pain."
Right.
What? Didn't you know this villain's Chakotay's brother?
No! What?
Dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun-dun! Chakotay, I happen to know you don't have a brother.
Okay, stepbrother.
Yeah. Oh, God. Why?
He, too, is a son of Earth. I have no idea what his name is. Sorry.
Pull a pack.
He, too, has the same animal spirit.
What would his Indian name be? Yes.
Just look. You pull, you pull that hood off of him, and he has a tattoo just like Chakotay.
Is his bigger?
Yeah, of course it's bigger. Oh my God.
Now I'm trying to think what a spirit animal would have been.
Voyager, the final frontier.
Now I'm picturing Neelix leading Row, Row, Row Your Boat Sing Along.
Oh God. Tuvok's got his loot.
Yeah, they rescue them. They beam over to the other ship. And the chair spins around. They say, "Meet our new gunner." And it's Tuvok with his loot sitting there.
And Neelix is like, "I have made a Leola root marshmallow."
Yeah, yeah. Marshmallow. Not in front of the Klingons. Not in front of the Kazon.
Not in front of the Kazon.
Oh my God. Oh, you know, I'd almost rather see that version of Star Trek V.
The Voyager home.
The Voyager with whales.
Oh, man. Sounds like someone needs to get on a YouTube project. So, Philip, yeah. Suzanne, you guys write the script, and then we'll get Tristan to do the video work.
Yes.
Yes. We can get Aaron Harvey in the Babel Conference. He can design the ships and all for you if you need him to.
Yeah, yeah. He did the greatest ISS Intrepid, which relates to the latest To the Journey out there, and it is a cross between the Defiant and the USS Voyager because it's for the Mirror Universe, and so it's an offshoot of them both in a little way. And he did such a bang-up job, man. I love that guy. Yeah. He's really good at what
he
does.
But I thought the addition of the Bajoran solar cell wings was a little bit odd.
Well, that's all about conserving power because of the 75-year journey home. That was added on later.
It's a tough little ship.
Well, if they just find the eddies, they can be home in like 2 days.
But then you wouldn't have the show, right? So
no, believe it or not, going back to the episode, I did want to mention that there was one line that I thought of y'all about that it just makes this episode have a completely different spin. So it's when Janeway is a little concerned about her sanity. She's walking down the hallway and she hears that voice that she think is Lord Burley saying like something like, "I can't help but falling in love with you." And she turns around and it's a crewman. And she's like, "Oh, obviously I'm hallucinating." I'm like, what if that crewman was really saying that to her? And he's like, "I can't help but falling in love with you." Oh, no.
What if that had been Chakotay?
Yeah. Now,
would that have been?
She overheard Chakotay saying, "I'm the Chakotay you want me to be." And then she looks and, oh, damn it, he's talking to B'Elanna.
No.
I love that line because that I really then wanted to do this Ready Room and have it be titled, you know, it's not the Chakotay we want, it's the Chakotay we deserve.
Oh, no.
All right. Well, now that you brought it up, should we go there and discuss Bikotay?
All right. Yeah.
I know. I'm sorry. I just feel like I punched myself in the gut. But it is kind of dirty. And I love the fact, though, I mean, when you read behind the scenes stuff about this episode, both Robert Beltran and Roxanne Biggs Dawson thought that this was the most ridiculous thing that was just never really happened.
Well, no, Robert Beltran thought that it was good. He thought that he liked that part of the story.
Well, they were giggling, though. They're like, we're making out. This is so
well,
stupid.
Sure, on
I can't
the set,
believe it.
But like later on, talking about this episode, he liked this part and Roxanne did it.
Really?
Yeah.
Was it because Chakotay was doing something?
Well, it's because he got to make out. Yeah. Of course he liked that. But he really enjoyed the idea of pairing up with B'Elanna?
No, I'm not going to say he enjoyed the idea of pairing up with B'Elanna per se.
That would be Tristan.
But
yeah, that's right.
What he said was that he was intrigued by the scene. And now you can picture Robert Beltran saying this, right? You know, with all the great deep answers that he gives to things. He says, that was a fun one. That was very interesting to me. Because it revealed in Torres how she might be feeling about Chakotay. The entity reveals all of our fantasies, and we got to see how she feels about him.
Yeah, okay. Here's my interpretation of the whole thing about that. Like, I don't think B'Elanna has anything more than a little bit of a schoolgirl crush on Chakotay because she looks to him as more of like a mentor and a role model and the person that she goes to for guidance.
That's what Roxanne said.
Would she actually go for it? Absolutely not. He is friend zoned. She needs him there forever. And so, like, maybe I think what the alien Botha dude was doing was like he went with this deep-seated some conscious thought to maybe put her just off of her guard enough to where she would go for it, you know, and like, does that make any sense?
Well, my favorite part about this, and this is having, because I'm doing my Voyager rewatch, and so I've seen this probably a couple, like last month, and so I watched it again. I actually thought, like, you know, when Chakotay would, like, he kind of just like appeared that where like the audience knew like, oh, that's fake, but like, no, okay, we actually do think that's really Chakotay because he goes down to engineering after Janeway tells him, and so, but he's talking to B'Elanna, like, you know, and then when it starts to kind of get a little fake, and he's like, yeah, we could take the escape pods and leave. I'm like, you know, you have shuttles. I mean, right. You don't.
Yeah, it
doesn't
right?
jump to the escape pods.
Yeah, first, you wreck these things all the time.
It does
dude.
Seem. It seems like Chakotay initially, right? And I'm thinking, Chakotay, that is the worst plan I've ever heard when he says it only take us like a week to get there and then maybe we can find some help and come back.
Yeah, a week, that might be too late.
Maybe, but then you immediately know it's not him because then he starts.
Well, yeah, he's
Chris, so.
You know that's why he resorts to the making out tactics.
Yeah.
But I mean, Chris, you know, and especially you would know that ever since the inception of Starfleet, every escape pod is automatically equipped with booze.
Right.
You know, that's 22nd century, you know, doctrine. So that's what he was trying to get her, you know.
I know. They have the panel that says, in case of emergency, break glass, and there's like a bottle of Jack Daniels right behind it.
Yeah.
Well, knowing this alien, I hate to go this route, but he's probably got roofies too.
Probably.
Wow, he's just like the Traveler.
And some LDS.
I think on the view screen, you see him, and there's all the white light coming from behind. This should have been, like, colored light, maybe some lava lamps back there.
Like a disco?
Not a disco, but like
hello, Voyager.
Just spotlight.
You call the ladies' man.
Yeah, kind of psychedelic. Yeah.
Hey, babe, what's happening?
I'm going to have me some Delta Quadrant cognac real quick here.
Do you think the outside of his ship should have been painted with flowers?
Wait. Did you want a ship with flowers, Chris? Because I can get you a ship with flowers.
I don't see any flowers there. I can get you a ship
there.
With flowers. That will make you
are
happy.
Flowers. Oh, my God.
Oh, Neil looks so ready to please.
He is. He's so eager.
But Neelix, when he's talking to Janeway about the cup with the flowers, it sounds like he's talking to a kindergarten student, right? Well, yeah. I don't see any flowers on there.
That would be pretty, though.
Yeah, yeah. Would you like a snack?
I've got some great Leola root cookies I just baked.
Yeah.
Well, I also love the sign of how, you know, Janeway just is, you know, her priorities in life, which remind me of me and also to steal my people, Troy, where it's like, you know, she goes to, and this is even in her, we later find out it's a fantasy, but she goes to her quarters. I forget her initial replicator order, but it's like this nice healthy meal. She's like, yeah, but she's like, scrap that coffee ice cream. I'm like, that's, there you go.
Right. Okay.
You're with me.
Oh, I'm so glad you brought this up. Okay, because remember, holographic food is nutritionally balanced, right? Because that's why Deanna Troi doesn't like the sundaes, right? Because they just don't taste the same as real ice cream, real chocolate. So if I could have nutritionally balanced coffee ice cream every single day and be fit enough to be a starship captain, not only would I do it, but why is Janeway not doing this every day?
And does she have, just like Deanna, does she have like a little, you know, way to eat that chocolate sundae or eat that coffee ice cream? Does she have a, you know, little ritual that she does? Does she spoon?
She invites like Chakotay over, like Picard invites Beverly over, and they sit down, and then she says, "Now I'm going to show you how to properly eat coffee ice cream."
The ice cream. And
there you go.
It's a very subtle teaching tool.
This scene also made me ask the question: when you ask the replicator for a dish, how much time do you have to change your mind before it actually materializes?
It took a while.
Because we rarely ever see anyone order something and then pause and then say, scratch that. I want this instead.
I guess that's actually kind of a pitfall of the 24th century. You can't like open your fridge and like look for like a good 15 minutes, you know, like as your mom's yelling at you to close the door. You know,
close the replicator panel.
Yeah, exactly.
You're letting all the matter out.
Just wanted a nice, hot, plain tomato soup. Anyway.
Yeah, don't give us too many choices. Tom will get pissy.
Yeah.
And this is just, I know these are random notes. I'm sorry, you can stop me whenever you want. But just another random note that I wrote that doesn't really fit anywhere. I just, like, for just a million points to Robert Picardo for the way he pronounces the word macabre. I'm like, I just want that. Just always that recording, just everywhere.
Okay, here's some more random stuff. I guess this is our random notes section at this point, since we did such
potent
a great job
potables
of going through this episode, you know, act by
the
act.
The Peetish Mightier.
Speaking of the doctor, you've got Kes in engineering, and she has to dial up all this stuff so that she can initiate the warp field. And of course, I know that Philip is very happy that this scene exists because he got to see Kes for a long time. But I'm just thinking, the doctor is the computer.
Right?
You can just do all this yourself. You don't actually need someone to be in engineering. You don't need to give them instructions. And you certainly don't need to give lengthy explanations about the pros and cons of the instructions.
No, this is my favorite scene. I love it because it actually, to me, is later, not like on purpose, but like it's later used in Enterprise during Phlox's episode. Remember when he has the fake T'Pol and he's trying to figure stuff out and he's like, oh, how do you do this? And the fake T'Pol's like, oh no. But like, you have this with like,
well, you
I
sound
love this
just like Jolene Blaylock.
Yeah, she's like, she plays it straight as Scooby-Doo. But I love this Voyager part because to me, everyone always complains about teching the tech. Like, they treat this like how it would really be. Like, Kes and the doctor are not engineers. And so, like, you know, they're like, you know, Kes, you need to go do the warp fusion field or whatever. And she's like, how do I do that? And he's like, how hard can it be? I don't know. And he's like, you need to do this and this and this. And she's like, how do I do that? And he's like, check the manual. I mean, I don't know. I'm a doctor, not an engineer.
But I felt that Kes did represent the audience because I think this is when they're still in sick bay, but the doctor's giving her these instructions or he's giving her information and it's very techie. And she's just like, what does that mean, right?
Like, yeah, she got that? Nuts.
She's very willing, but like, and how do I do that?
Just tell me which buttons to press, please.
Internet? That's how? I don't know.
JFGI.
Space Google it.
Did someone activate the ECH? Because I like how the doctor takes almost immediate charge. Like, I mean, which I think is cool, but this is kind of early times. And so, but he's like, it's just you and me, Kes. We're doing this.
He kind of had to.
I was also surprised that the doctor did not know the expression, someone was walking on your grave. Because
Macabre.
If he's programmed with Dr. McCoy's knowledge, I could actually hear
right?
Bones saying that in D. Kelly's voice. So it really seemed like that's something that
they did keep out the pithy Earth trivia.
Yeah, right.
That's true.
You have to remember Barkley was in charge of a lot of his programming.
So are you suggesting that the doctor should have stuttered a lot when he was trying to give instructions?
Cool.
I would love that. At the end of like every diagnosis he gives to a patient, and then he ends it with, "Did I stutter?"
Yeah. Oh, jeez.
All right. Do you girls have any random notes?
Oh, I'm looking here. I do have one that's very, very important. And Suzanne, I think you'd agree with me. The big unanswered question of this whole episode is, who did Chakotay see? Because we find him in the turbo lift. He never got to engineering. He's just standing there. And so what was he thinking
about? I think
about?
He saw his
He was thinking about
animal.
The last person he talked to.
That's it? Just yeah. The last person? Literally the last person he talked to.
My favorite part about Chakotay is that the producers forgot he's there.
Right.
Because as you see it, Janeway walks in. She notices, oh, it's Chakotay. F. And then she has her Mark delusion. And then the camera pans to her frozen. And the camera pans to her only in the turbo. It's like, did she kiss yes. Chakotay? What happened?
Like, yeah, like, is he really in there and he's just that far off to the side? Or, yeah, just you shows her.
Since we're doing Glee, okay. So what Chakotay would be singing would be Cellophane Man from Chicago. Because that is how he is treated.
That's fantastic. And you know, there's another Voyager connection to that because Joel Grey, who starred in a season 2 episode Resistance, he did that song.
And if Matthew were on the show with us right now, he would be singing it.
Justin? I can't do it.
Aww.
Well, you know, Chris, a lot about what you talk about is sort of you didn't say the randomness of the episode, but to me, I mean, I like this episode, but to me, it also, to a certain extent, doesn't know what it wants, because it's like, it's a Janeway episode, just kidding, it's a holodeck episode, just kidding, it's an ensemble episode, just kidding, it's Kes Saves the Day.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, it's true, it doesn't really entirely embrace what it is.
Right.
It has no clear ownership.
This episode generally gets good ratings. It was popular. It was, I believe, the second highest or the second most watched episode in season 2. But it's also, when you actually sit down and watch it, like you said, Philip, it really doesn't have a strong focal point. It doesn't quite know what it is.
Well, did we want to analyze every character's vision here? I mean, we talked Tom. And we talked, I mean, we didn't really talk Mark and Janeway, but then Tuvok.
We talked a little bit about that.
Yeah, about him touching his lute. did we ever see him play his lute ever again? Ever?
Oh, I don't boy.
I think he ever plays, does he?
Did he ever jam anytime during Voyager?
No, now see.
There were no space hippies.
If they
no.
had done the Way to Eden in the Delta Quadrant, then he could have gotten down.
That would have been pretty sweet.
It would have been a great TOS nod. Like, instead of Sulu, you know, forget him. And we would have had the space hippies back for the anniversary episode. That would probably better have been, you know.
Herbert.
We reach. Sniff.
They reached to the Delta Quadrant, man.
In jail, and the judge bangs his gavel and he says, no bail. Gonna.
Go, Philip, go. I love to watch the space hippies, just for the record. Like, it's sort of one of those episodes like Spock's Brain where if you just sit back and enjoy it for entertainment value, it's got it. You can't have fun.
It is hilarious.
Oh, exactly. Yeah, definitely.
But to go back to Voyager here, I think one of the reasons why this was so popular, especially in its day, like I remember when it first ran, this was one of my favorites of season 2. And I think it's just because, and Jeri Taylor, this is one of her strengths, she gets more into the characters' personal lives and gives us a glimpse of, you know, who they are outside of that uniform and their duty station. And so we always like that.
And out of the uniform and under the sheets.
Maybe. Yeah.
All right. Well, final thoughts and ratings then. Suzanne, what are your final thoughts on this episode and your rating?
This episode is just a little too weird for me with the gothic Janeway, Jane Eyre, doesn't know who she wants to be, and the costume that costs way too much coffee that she can't drink it anymore. And then the whole Bacote thing, I can't get past that. It makes me want to vomit every time. Yeah, it's just not one of my favorites of season two or the series at all. I would give it 2 cucumber sandwiches.
Very good. All right. How about you, Philip?
I mean, I think for a final thought, I just want to add one thing about, you know, as I'm doing this rewatch of Voyager, I mean, currently in like season 4. But Cass to me is just, I have never noticed her as much as I have this time before. And I just love the way she plays this because she just plays it great throughout the series. But I love, like, nobody can give side eye like Cass, because like there's the part where you know, she's getting infected with, you know, the spores or whatever, and the doctor's like, you know, just stop thinking about it, and she like just gives him the look of like, you tried doing this, you know, and
but, I mean, if it were Cass, that easy, I would,
right? But I mean, and she has her tell, I mean, I think Cass is just a great character. I think if someone has not watched Voyager or has not watched it enough, really watch for Cass, because Jennifer Lane gives, I give her all the credit, you know, whatever situations there was, I think she does a wonderful job. As far as ratings, speaking of which, I would give it 8 out of 10 pus-filling sore spots.
God.
Mm.
Possibly the most disgusting rating ever on the Ready Room.
The last time I gave one.
All right. And Shar, how about you?
This is more of a nostalgic favorite for me than anything. Like, I think objectively, it's not the best episode. I would say it's very average, but I remember when it did come out, how much I did enjoy it, just because we knew so little about the characters. Anything that we got, I immediately clenched for it. And so this was one that I watched on the VHS tapes that I would make all the time. I loved it. So to kind of balance out between, you know, objective rating and my personal rating, I'm going to give it 3.5 non-existent Bothan ships.
All right. You know, one of those is a Kazon ship. And I was thinking at that point that they should try to weave the Bothan web around Voyager. All right.
That would have been kind of cool.
I don't have a lot of final thoughts on this episode. You know, it's an okay episode. It's just one of those that, watching through Star Trek, you get a lot of episodes like this, which are kind of meh, okay, it's an episode. I don't like the way that Jerry Taylor wrote Janeway in this episode. I just think it does a disservice to the character and the whole point of having Janeway in the captain's chair in the first place. But I think you made a good point, Shar, that I think the problem is that there is a generational gap in our thinking, the way that Jerry Taylor was viewing the working woman and the way that we do. And so I think she had all the best intentions. It just doesn't read well to us when we watch it necessarily, but maybe it works for other people.
Yeah. And maybe it worked better back then than it does now.
Yeah. I mean, maybe, yeah, at that point in time, definitely it would have worked better than it does now. But still, I would prefer them not to write female characters so that it works in the time that it's written, but rather to be progressive in the way that they write them, because they're supposed to be in the 24th century. So
yes,
you need to, as the writer, think forward to when all of these things that you're hoping will be achieved have been achieved, and then what will her role be in that society? And that's what they so often fail to do in Star Trek, and especially on Voyager with Janeway. So it's kind of disappointing. But overall, I mean, the story, you know, we talked about scientific method a lot. It reminds me of a lot of different stories throughout. I think if wishes were horses, maybe that's a good example, too, that you mentioned, Philip, earlier on. Like if you're thinking about Deep Space Nine or even Second Sight, where Sisko is always seeing this other side of this woman who keeps appearing to him. So anyway, I'm going to give this one just a middle-of-the-road rating on my scale of 10. I'm going to give it 5 slices of fried mert cake, because that's what was really served, not cucumber sandwiches.
You ate Chris, one.
Chris, we're all going to have to give you a look about that.
Okay. I want you to do it one at a time. Because we've got time. Because the script for this episode of The Ready Room is a little bit short. So we've got time to fill if you each want to give me a look. All right. Perfect. Okay. Well, thanks for joining us today, guys. Before we go, Suzanne, tell everyone where they can find you around the interwebs and here on the network. Of course, you're running our Facebook page.
Yes, you can check out the Facebook page Monday through Friday for questions of the day. You can also find me on the Twitter at Suzanne Abbott.
And also, we should mention to everyone that we're welcoming Suzanne aboard now as the editor, one of two editors at Trek FM, the other Yay! New editor being Mr. Philip here.
Oh, wait, what? Oh, no. Yes, yes.
You signed up. You didn't know, did you, Philip?
Oh, you're getting that promotion you always wanted, dude. Don't drop it now.
I did Harry Kim.
I did see that Puzan entry, but I didn't know what it meant. Now it all is coming to light. Oh, man.
All right, Philip, where can people find you besides, you know, helping edit articles here on the network?
Sure. No, I'm very excited to be co-editor along with Suzanne about wonderful articles here on Trek.fm. But in addition, they can listen to me each and every week on Earl Grey as we talk all things Star Trek Next Generation with my wonderful co-hosts who also go off the rails with me, Darren Moser and Daniel Prue. And they can find me on Twitter with my handle, NC Public Servant. That's NC for North Carolina.
You should get a longer Twitter handle, you know, one that really takes up like half the tweet.
My actual Twitter handle is unpronounceable to you, Chris.
Okay. All right. Well, and I was going to mention, too, that not only do you talk all things TNG on Earl Grey, you also talk all things TNG on all the other shows, even if the topic isn't TNG.
I'm the niner of the next generation.
Very good. All right. Well, thanks again, guys.
Thanks.
Well, Chris, as usual, when we got this panel together, I knew we were going to have a good time because we did. I always enjoy talking with Philip or Suzanne, but bring them together, we got gold.
We did, yeah. Now, I think the real gold, however, will come about a week from now when they unveil to the World Wide Web their Bikote fanfic.
Oh, in a way, I can't wait, and yet I'm really worried.
A little bit frightening, isn't it?
Yeah. I'm going to go into that very carefully, I think. Read it in small installments.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good idea.
Because I think I can only handle so much of that at a time.
I'm scared of what they're going to come up with, especially given some of the stuff we discussed on the other side of the room.
The other side of the room.
Truth.
All right. Well, it was a good discussion today, fun discussion, but it's not the only thing we've been talking about here on the network recently. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm. Standard Orbit.
They look at the dailies the next day, and Bill Shatner crossed his eyes, intentionally, crossed his eyes on a close-up because the camera could see his face even though they couldn't. So the take was totally unusable.
Earl Grey.
Again, you know, because it's January, my ship was shot beyond the bounds of normal interstellar travel to the center of the galaxy, but we were back in time for tea.
The Orb.
Curzon is involved with the Khitomer Accords. Spock is at Khitomer when those are being talked about, so you would think they would have run into each other.
They probably hung out in the bar together.
To the journey!
Yeah, Harry, what is he doing in the Mirror Universe? Okay, he's got a goatee, for sure.
He's got a goatee. He's got long hair.
Yeah, I love like Garrett Wong, like 2008.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah.
The Ready Room.
I think of all the shows that people think of with Star Trek, I don't think anybody would have thought that Deep Space Nine would be the one to do a romantic comedy.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
But I mean, here's the question, John. If you're living Fight Club, then, you know, we have to ask. If you could fight anyone, who would you fight?
William Shatner.
All right.
Literary Treks.
Dan, one of the things that you mentioned here in the outline was just that our heroes are real people. And even sometimes in the novels for TOS, I feel like we kind of forget this.
The 602 Club.
Well, I've been always drawn to anything dealing with Arthurian legend or knights or dragons. And then having the plus of Dennis Quaid and the voice of Sean Connery, can't get enough of that, ever.
No, no, not at all. Even if it's coming from a dragon.
Hey, that works for me.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what we're talking about in your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe. You can find us everywhere you get your podcasts. Of course, we're in iTunes. We're also on Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, Windows Phone, BlackBerry, SoundCloud. You can go to the website and stream from the show page. You can download the MP3 file, and also you can grab the RSS link. This is a question that I received by a listener in email the other day. They asked about RSS. If you need the RSS link, go to the show page, and underneath the artwork and the streaming player, you'll see a row of buttons. And I think it's usually the last button on the row. It says RSS. If you click that, it will open up the RSS feed in whatever application you use, or you can right-click that and just copy, and then you can paste it over. But you can subscribe to all of our shows, including the master feed, by RSS if you want to do that. And there is a button there on every show page. While you're in iTunes, if you want to help us out here on the Ready Room, you can leave us a written review and a star rating. We'd love to hear what you think about the show, and also those reviews and ratings help us rise up in the search results. There are a lot of Star Trek podcasts out there. Of course, a lot of them are on our network, right, Char? But there's a lot to choose from.
It's true.
And so, you know, getting the search results, it's kind of hard to find things. And the more star ratings and the more written reviews you have, and also subscriptions, make a difference in where you place. So leave us those, please. We'd love to hear from you. And also, if you just stream the show, click subscribe. You'll get the latest episode as soon as I publish it, and that also helps us rise up, and it makes it easier for other Star Trek fans to find the Ready Room. One more way you can help us out is to become a patron of the network. We are a listener-supported network, and if you go to patreon.com/trekfm, you can choose any amount you like to contribute on a monthly basis. And that helps us cover the costs of production, hosting, and distribution. It costs quite a lot of money for us to operate the network and all the shows that we have, and we really appreciate your support there. We have so many wonderful patrons there who are helping us out, and they are the reason that you're able to get these shows every single week. So I hope that you'll take a moment and join that group. And I also want to thank our associate producer here on the Ready Room, Renee Roberts, who is a huge supporter of the network and has been for all the years that I've been doing Trek FM, going all the way back to the very beginning. I really appreciate Renee's help and everything that she does for us. And you can find Renee at Mares_1701 on Twitter. Send her a note, tell her thank you for supporting the Ready Room and Trek FM. Now, Char, I know that you would love to hear what people think about persistence of vision and everything that we talked about today. And of course, you can get us through the usual social media channels like Twitter at Trek FM. But also, we have this great group on Facebook called the Babel Conference. Tell everyone what that's about.
Yeah, okay. This is instead of our forums, which we had for some time, this is the replacement of those. And it is a closed Facebook group. So you do have to ask to join, but we have several mods who are on duty pretty much any time of the day. They'll let you write in.
Yeah, and we're just like Picard's fencing officer. We're always there waiting.
Yeah, it's true. I like that. But anyway, yeah, this is our group close to Trek FM listeners, because only you guys know about this. And we have fantastic discussions there. We talk anything and everything. Like today I was on there, there was talk about teching the tech. Because that kind of stuff is just right over my head. But for some people, they're really into that. And so there's that. There's the superficial, you know, ha-ha jokes. There's everything in between. There's all the good discussion. None of the bad stuff. There's not the bashing, which,
yeah,
I'm sorry, becomes the mainstay of so many places. And that's just,
yeah,
it's static. It's noise. It's negative attention. And thankfully, we do not see any of that on the Babel Conference. We have fantastic people making posts in there. And so if you haven't joined us, please do so. And a lot of the show hosts also pop in there as well. I'm one of them. I'm more of a Twitter person, but I get on Facebook every now and again.
Yeah. Yeah, it's a great place. And in fact, the other night we had a lengthy discussion about my weird accent.
That's true. Yes, we did. And we talked about what other Trek FM hosts sound like as well.
That's right. Yeah, I've never mentioned it here on the show before, but some time ago, I got a review of the Ready Room on iTunes where the person gave us 3 stars and said that the show's great, you know, the content's great, but it's really hard to listen to because of the host's obnoxious accent.
I'm sorry, that's kind of funny because you've got a wonderful hodgepodge of several accents because you grew up in Alabama, you live in Japan. I mean, you're all over the place. You're like the Jeffrey Combs of Earth.
He is everywhere.
Yeah, I know I have a strange accent, but they also told me, they gave me some advice in the review. Mm. And they told me, advice to all podcasters, learn to neutralize your regional accent so you don't alienate listeners. So given that my accent is, like you said, a hodgepodge, okay. So
anyway, yeah, I'm sorry. Funny, not everybody sounds like a Midwestern American, which is probably what I'm assuming the reviewer considers the normal accent.
I have no idea. I have no idea. But I thought it was kind of interesting. But anyway, we had a discussion about that on the Babel Conference the other day. But how do you join the Babel Conference? So what you need to do is you need to go to Facebook and type Babel in the search field, B-A-B-E-L, and it'll pop right up. Or on our website, you can click discussion up on the menu bar, and that'll take you there as well. Just click join. We'll let you right in. And come join in the discussion, and we hope to see you over there. Now, I mentioned Twitter. Our username is TrekFM. If you want to send email to the show, go to trek.fm/contact. There's a form there. Choose a show and choose the Ready Room, and that'll come to me by email. And also, you can go to speakpipe.com/TrekFM and send me a voicemail if you'd like to do that. Now, Char, when you're not finishing up your dress so you can join Janeway on her next visit to her Gothic Hollow novel, where can people find you?
Well, you can very often find me on the Twitter. My handle is Oh the Profanity, and you can also find me elsewhere on Trek FM. I do To the Journey.
To the Journey!
With my fantastic co-host Tristan Riddell, we talk all things Voyager, and new episodes of that show drop every Thursday. So if you enjoyed this discussion and you haven't listened to us yet, well, what are you waiting for? Get on that.
Yes, do tune in to The Journey, the master of listener feedback. You guys get more feedback than any show on the network.
Somehow, yeah, we get a lot of people writing in. It's probably the fact that we do entertain listener show ideas. People suggest those practically on a daily basis at this point, whether it's emailing us or sending them on Twitter or on the Babel Conference, you name it. We get a lot of feedback and we do love it and we do try to address as much of it as we can personally, but it is making us busy.
You do stay busy. It is. For sure. Definitely. All right. Well, if you'd like to find me, you can find me on Twitter. My username is C. Brian Jones, letter C and Brian with a Y. You can also find me on Facebook. I'm there in the Babel Conference. I try to check in every day and some days I'm more active than others, but I'd love to chat with you over there. You can also find me on my personal website, cbrianjones.com. And yes, Char, I did just write another article about perfume, so.
I'm shocked.
There you go. But you have to go watch this video. It's incredible. This video is amazing. It's from South by Southwest.
Oh, I did hear that was really good. I'll have to check that out.
I don't know how they do this, but it's 3D projection mapping. And I can only imagine being there must have been like being in a holodeck. It's incredible. So go check out that article on my website at cbrianjones.com. And then elsewhere on the network, you can find me doing The Orb with Matthew Rushing, where we talk exclusively about Deep Space Nine. And you can also find me from time to time on Hyper Channel, where I share my thoughts on some news stories from the world of Star Trek. Well, Char, it was a great show today, but I'm going to head back down and catch Chakotay because I really want to find out who he saw on the view screen.
Oh, let me know what you find out, okay? I'm really curious. But in the meantime, I think it's time to stick a big, passionate kiss in it. Because the Ready Room is done.
Recording.
Janeway's Victorian pants.
Whiny children pants.
Yeah, cucumber Chakotay sandwich pants.
And Bolana's pants.
Yeah, because they're sharing pants.
Sharing pants? Wow.
Because they're both crumpled up on the floor.
Flower-covered pants.
Bounce. Wait, did you want flowers on those pants, Chris? Because I can get you pants with flowers on them.
Where is he going to get the cup with the flowers? Is he going to go and, like, he's going to paint flowers on a cup to make his captain happy?
Yes, I could see him painting them on.
He should have done that in a following episode. Hey, Captain, look!
Yeah, because
I got a cup with flowers on it.
That's what needed, like,
just for you.
It was like another, like he's like the ultimate, like, built-up character in an RPG. Like, I'm going to spend my experience. Like, do you want strength? No. I want pottery skills now. If you could give me, okay. I mean, like, you could use some armor with that character. No. I want
the ability. Artistry. Yeah.
Now, would he paint flowering Leola root?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No doubt.
I guess the Leola plant probably does flower, right? Because we only eat the root. Apparently, the rest of the plant's not edible.
Oh, which, by the way, I'm not going to say the side, as Andy, first-time Trekker, always says, the side eye that Janeway got when Neelix was like, hey, come try lunch. And there's like the 10-minute span of every character close up.
Tuvok was the best.
I
the eyebrow was like,
scene.
Don't
eat it.
Janeway's like, is it safe? Is it safe?
Do I have your approval? Can I leave?
I mean, even Harry,
Janeway,
even Harry gives her the look.
Food.
Harry gives her the look like, don't worry, Captain, just go.
Yeah. Yeah. Captain, you should eat today.
Yeah, by the way, like, I thought, like, all their faces, like, you could read whatever you want. Like, are they saying it's good? Are they saying it's safe? Are they saying it's bad? Like, it's so, like, they're saying.
Chakotis was saying, I'll see you later.
He always
it
has
was,
that.
He has this smug little smile on his face.
He does.
They should have cut to sickbay, where you get the doctor giving a look also. Like, cut to other areas of the ship.
Ensign Wileman, down to Lieutenant Carey in engineering. Yeah, Captain, you should go.
Also, the guy who's sending the secrets to the Kazon, who we only see this, like, random scene unrelated to the episode where he's making a secret transmission.
He takes a break.
And then the Kazon on the other ship.
Yeah. He pauses the transmission for a second for the glance.
And then, like,
and then goes back to what he's
and
doing.
And then, like, Seska also looks at her from the console, gives the glance too.
And then you cut to the Kazon ship, and the Maj gives a look as well.
Oh my god. Even the Vidians approve. We won't take your organs today because we want nourished organs.
Right. The Vidians, go eat something. We need your organs.
Then we'll
tomorrow.
Harvest you.
We need your stomach, and we don't want it empty.
God, now I'm imagining
gross.
Every character ever in Voyager. Like, goes to Lieutenant Barclay working on the array.
Hey, I mean, shit, while Suspiria. We're at it, let's just get Captain Picard, Beverly, Deanna Troi.
Riker props his leg up on a console and gives her a look.
And nods.
You have, like,
he would wink at her, probably.
You have the Borgified Seven, who's, like, still a Borg, and, like, her red light goes. And then,
oh my god.
Sock it to me.
Even Tasha Yar does it. And she's dead. In all universes.
Maybe the Traveler, when he's starting to fade away, he could use some soup as well.
Has his arm creepily around Wes. And then.
Ew.
There's something special about you.
Have some candy
I bet.
For you,
it's
little boy.
It's a love we can't talk about.
God. Except in Suzanne's fanfic.
Oh, yes.
Is that what you're working on, Suzanne?
What
Wesley
am I
and the Traveler.
Well, see, that's because Suzanne has a whole Native American-based fanfic, and because Wesley met the Native American planet, he's included in that chapter. So
it has which the soundtrack, too, of all the flute music.
Oh, yes.
Is that, like, instead of, like, instead of, like, the Boom Shakalooka, it's like... Like, that's how you know it's about to get down.
Can you do that one more time?
Let me get my flute ready. All right. I can't do it.
Ah!
I'm having performance anxiety.
All the suspense. All the suspense, and then Philip gets performance anxiety on us right there at the end.
I think
wow, dude, you know that you can go to the pharmacy and fix that.
I'm just waiting for B'Elanna to have a fantasy about me doing it.
Oh, I imagine it'll happen after this episode.
So what's going on here is after the music ends, is there going to be like 7 minutes of the other side of the room at the end of this episode?
You should. This should just be a mega cut right here.
It's just, guys, here's everything we talked about after we hit record to start the show, but didn't start the show.
Yeah, I think we're officially over 5 minutes.
I think, isn't this your new spinoff progress show, the Ready Boom Boom Room?
Yeah. Boom boom. Okay, so I'm going to make up some intro that I didn't prepare ahead of time and then let Philip do a synopsis, which may involve flute music.
It should. Fade in. Okay, I'm done.
Okay, here we go.